Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan, with those big plays keep happening, how frustrating, and first of all, why, I guess, but just how frustrating is it that game after game they keep happening?
Yeah, it's very frustrating. We'll look at everything, man. We're going to look at everything to, you know, have a play that goes down the field and you know, throw over your head or a good battle. Like I can live with that one, but the ones of the big explosive plays that I can't put my finger on, that's a lot for us to dig into. If I had one specific reason, I'd say this or this. But, yeah, we got, like I said, a lot to get better at, and it's definitely frustrating.
John Keim firing away right after the game on Sunday. He also had a follow-up question yesterday in the Monday press conference. Asking about sort of, okay, you said you were going to look at everything, so what did you see? Well, he pushed that answer back until Thursday. John joined us right now. John, of course, covers the team and has been covering the team longer than anybody has. ESPN's John Keim, at John_Keim. I want to start with that because I played that piece of sound yesterday. I heard what you asked yesterday, and you know, I'll just net it out, and I think you'd agree. He essentially said, yeah, we're going to dig into that tonight, meaning we haven't really dug into looking at everything quite yet, but we're going to look into that tonight. And knowing that we don't get to hear from him again until Thursday because of the Monday night game. So what do you think they're going to find when they look into everything about this defense?
I think, first of all, I think they already know. Like, they can dig into it some more, but there's seven games of evidence here of what's going on. You know, Monday night digging into it is, you know, I think you have to discuss things and go over things, but how, you know, you've seen the same issues week after week, and it's, sometimes they're kind of different, but the results are the same. So what you're going to see is it's a myriad of things. I mean, you know, do you want to say injuries a little bit? Yeah, sure. Like, you've lost now your third defensive end, but Dorrance Armstrong was still out there and they were really bad. And so, you know, his impact is going to be great moving forward because he was having a very good year. So that, you know, there's a little bit of that there, but there's also like, okay, the run fits are really inconsistent and the run defense has dropped. It started off all right, and it has dropped the last couple weeks. So why is that? And I think, again, is it run fits? Is it what they're being asked to do? Is it, you know, the big plays being allowed? I mean, for a while, it was communication. You'd see guys go in motion against the Packers, and they couldn't handle that. And then they got better with that aspect. But then there's other ones that pop up. You know, I think it feels like, you know, you plug one hole and another one springs a leak. And that's kind of what it feels like. And I think, to me, Kevin, whenever you have it like this, it's an organizational failure. Did you bring in the right guys? Are you coaching them the right way? Are they just not good enough, or are they not? You know, so what is it? But it's. I think what Quinn will always say in this is it's not one thing, which I would agree with. I don't think there's one easy solution here. I don't think there's like this player mutiny on the coach or anything like that. But it's, you know, I don't, to my knowledge, right? So, but it doesn't get this bad without a lot of help from a lot of people.
Yeah, so what will, so I agree with you. They obviously aren't digging into it for the first time last night, right, to say, oh my God, we're having defensive problems. What do we do about it? The question is, for you, what do you think they're going to do about it?
Honestly, I don't know, because what are the things that you can do now? Like, who are you going to play more that's going to come in and make...
Well, let me lay out the options for you, okay? Because I did this on the show yesterday. One, he could do nothing. Two, he could look at Joe Witt Jr. and say, we're going to move in another direction. I'm not saying fire Joe Witt Jr., but to, you know, elevate somebody else to coordinator, play caller, maybe even take it over himself or assign it to somebody else. That's option two. Option three is, you know, meaningful personnel changes. Option four is both. They do something with the coordinator, they do something with personnel. So which of those four, I think I've laid out the most obvious of the four, which of those four do you think that they decide to move forward with after they've looked into everything?
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to do any, I don't think they're doing anything with the coordinator. Because again, I think he knows that it's more than just, it's not as simple as that. Now, what could happen too, Kevin, is does Dan Quinn get a little bit more involved, because that is the area of his expertise. That's how he became a head coach with all that. I don't know that will happen, but that's something that could happen. It could be like in the past, they've kind of restructured some of the ways they've gone about practice, gone about the way they've implemented some things. Joe Witt has talked about that last year and this year, about little changes in that area. It could be some of that stuff, although I don't know that that's going to result in the grand changes that you want. Could it be that you tweak some of the way you do your run fits, or the way you play this run? Does it have to be changed because certain things aren't working, right? You see too many times two guys in one gap. Why is that? So is there something you can do there? I have a feeling it'd be more of those kind of changes than anything, something grand at this point. Because I don't know, like, what big change is going to result in the way you want. Not that you don't do anything. You can't just throw your hands up, right? I just don't think they're at that point where they're going to make that kind of change. And personnel-wise, you know, I know everybody wants to talk about Marshon Lattimore. The problem is, like, he's not the only one messing up in the backfield there. And, you know, it's different. It feels like it's somebody different each game. So, and who, you know, can you do something there? You can do whatever you want. But the other problem is that I've always thought is that they have five corners on their roster. I guess six now with Hamilton, but like they have their top corners, three of the top five are all better suited or have shown that they play better on the inside than the outside, right? So like, but Jonathan Jones can play outside there. Mikey Sanders still did play outside there, but listen, man, like he's had his own issues inside. So, you know, I don't, that's the hard part here. And then you lose all these defensive ends. So now what are you going to do there? And is there a different way you can apply? Can you apply more pressure to generate more turnovers? That's the other thing. Like the turnover stuff is ridiculous. So I don't know, Kevin. I don't know that it's going to be some big changes where it's like, oh, wow. I don't know if it's going to be that. I think it's going to be a lot of subtle things behind the scenes and maybe tweaking the way you do some things to see if that works to get you through to the bye.
You're out there every day. I just watch these things. I thought he looked about as pissed off as he's ever looked on Sunday after that game.
Definitely. And, I mean, there were times very stern, very short with the answers. Not short in terms of, like, you know, just rude, but just, like, I think it was Nikki asked him if he, like, I can't remember what the question was. The answer was yes, about his frustration, like, yes, very. Like, surprised where you're at. Yes, very. And it was just that. Like, sometimes he might expand on some things, but like, that was just, yes, very. And then I asked him about the play right before, the series right before halftime. He's basically like, words can't explain. I was hot. And that was a ridiculous series, right? And, you know, it was just bad. I mean, you know, on multiple levels, you know, execution, you can look at, you know, what second and 17 and that, you know, giving up a 44-yard pass. Are you kidding me? So, like,
I'll tell you that was one hell of a throw, and actually was one of Lattimore's best coverage plays of the season.
I agree, it was a phenomenal throw.
Yeah,
you're asking, you're basically like, MVP-type quarterback having an MVP-type year, receiver having a Pro Bowl-type year,
yeah,
corner having an up-and-down year. Like, who are you, you know, and again, it was a dime, like, no doubt about it. And Lattimore, yeah, was not like he was beaten by three steps. He was right there. It was a perfect throw, but, you know, and so, and that's what it took to beat you on that one. But still, like, you're also inviting it as well. And so, you know, it just, that's what I say. I think it's a multitude of things. That is there one sweeping change that could rectify it? I don't think I see that. Honestly, what needs to happen to the defense is the offense needs to get healthy.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, about the end of the first half, and I talked a lot about the offensive possession. You guys aren't watching it this way, but Brady was critical, right, of Washington not bleeding the clock. They actually only had one play,
yeah,
in which, yeah, they could have bled the clock, and it would have been meaningful had they done it on the Jalen Lane throw over the middle. But second and 17 after that sack, you got to rush three and play, you know, way deep. Let, yeah, let Brandon, yeah, Aubrey kick a 64-yard field goal. Just don't, yeah, give up the seven. Yeah. And so there's a lot of that, yeah, stuff going on. But back, yeah, to, exactly, kind of – back to, you know, when he said – and I think everybody's ears perked up. You know, I'm assuming yours did too when he said, we're going to look at everything. You know, essentially implying everything's on the table when it comes to this defense right now. And that's why yesterday I was very interested to see – and, of course, he pushed it to Thursday. That's fine. But if he comes out Thursday and it's just, yeah, there are some things we're going to do to you know, with the run and some of our coverages – and there's no bombshell. I'm not suggesting there needs to be, but I kind of thought that maybe there could be something big coming. But here's the problem, John. You can go to these last two games and you can say it wasn't all on the defense. The offense, no, turned the ball over three times against the Bears. That's the number one reason,
yeah, yeah,
they lost,
yeah,
was turnover margin. Yep. And then on Sunday, two more turnovers, drop passes, penalties.
Yeah,
you know, that was a big
like
role.
That.
Yeah.
Well, that
if they were losing 44-41 in back-to-back games, maybe something big's coming.
Right. And so, like, you know, even like against the Bears, my point was that, yeah, the offense did three turnovers is a killer. You're also allowed to stop them. You know, like,
yes, you are. You are allowed to do that.
Bad. Like, there is no rule against that. So, like, you know, it's always like one mistake doesn't have to compound another. And it's a problem is it's negative complementary football, right? And like once one side turns it over, puts you in a bad spot, then the other one gives up points, you know, even though it's not, like, you're deep in your own territory, you turn over at your own 20, like, yeah, they're going to get points. You turn over and it's at the 30, the opposite 30, you don't have to give up points, you know, you know what I mean? Like, so, but it was bad complementary football. And then this week, you know, you knew the offense had to come out and be almost perfect. Now, without McLaurin, without Debo, it's just tougher. Like, you're throwing to Robbie Chosen, who was good several years ago. You know, you have Chris Moore, who is like, you know, yeah, he was practice squad. Nobody took him up until it would, so you're throwing to guys that aren't threatening, but yet you still can move it if a couple guys catch it. If the, you know, and Jaden was not as accurate as he normally is in some throws, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's timing with receivers or just off, whatever the reason, the accuracy wasn't the same. And like that all adds, like that all adds up. And so, you know, the defense forced a safety. They got a safety. They forced three punts, which is a couple more than I thought they might. So they did do some things to at least, you know, give the offense.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the fourth quarter, I don't think Dallas is, they've taken the foot off the pedal, but
oh,
you're right.
For
they,
sure. Listen, Dallas, yeah, couldn't end the score. And I'm not blaming the offense for the loss. Like, the defense wasn't stopping them. They gave it to a good place, but the offense had to be perfect, and they were unable
Agreed.
To do that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tough way to live.
Yeah, back to, you know, the idea that, you know, okay, the offense, like on Tuesday, I'm just like, look, you know, five bailed you out time and time again over the all of last season. How about after that fumble, that botched handoff, you don't let DeAndre Swift run it right down your throat,
yes,
for 34 yards,
right,
into chip shot,
that's
field goal range.
Point.
You know,
right,
with a kicker, no, who's shaky, you know?
Yes, exactly. That's my point. Like, that doesn't have to happen. And it's, you know, sometimes it's just the way you're playing that run, too, that pin pull, which hurt them all game, right? So, like, there are things that can be could have been rectified with that D to stop that. Like, they gained 36 yards on that drive. They didn't, that wasn't, you know, they have a
insane.
I mean,
yeah,
Yeah, so like it's just it's crazy that. But this is some of the stuff that, like, last year they were on the opposite end of that game, you know, and so, you know.
So what are they going to do? Because I opened the show today saying the loss of Dorrance Armstrong, some people might say, well, what's the difference, man? The defense is brutally terrible, and it could get worse because Dorrance Armstrong's had one hell of a season. But more importantly, what are they going to do at defensive end? They don't have They don't have any first down defensive ends, really. I know Martin's been playing there. What are they going to do?
I don't know. We'll find out. I don't have a good answer. That's one where I think they really were trying to talk about last night, because, like, what do you do? Like, who are you bringing in today?
And, you know, Jalen Holmes, right? The guy they released?
Yep, the guy they released. And I thought, like, well, maybe he'll play some more defensive end on Sunday. Then they release him. So, because he can play. They've been using him a lot at tackle. But you can play him at end. Like, you can, they use that big package at times with Kinlaw at end, but you could do some more of that, but that's like, he's wreaking havoc inside. They would like to keep him there. Preston Smith as a full-time guy, it's just a hard way to go at this point with him.
So how about this, John? Right. How about this? Remember last year when they were having all of the edge issues and Duron ended up getting moved outside occasionally? Well, I mean, could they move Duron or even Kinlaw to D end?
That's what I'm saying. Like, in there, they would use those three defensive tackle sets. So one of them has to play defensive end.
Yeah.
Last year it was Duron. This year it's been more Kinlaw. And so, you could do more of that because you can put, like, you can get a bigger lineup in there with some pass rushers because you can put Jacob Martin with that group, which they've done. And that creates, like, then you have guys who can rush the passer but also can play the run. So you can do more of that, yes. How often you want to do that, and then I think it's also sometimes, like, some teams you're going to do that a little bit more. Like, when you play the Eagles, you want to stop the run. So you're going to go more with that kind of look, plus with probably more three linebacker sets with Jordan McGee out there.
Yeah.
But that's very game plan specific versus a change in overall philosophy. So you could do more of that, yeah. And, yeah, because Von Miller's also out there too, but Von Miller's supposed to be the closer.
Yeah. What do you think about Jordan McGee? Every time he's out there, and I understand the Bears played a lot more 11 personnel, which kept, them in nickel more often. But what do they think of Jordan McGee? Because I'll tell you what, every time he's in the game, no matter what the snap count was, and I think he was in there for more snaps on Sunday than he was for any game so far, he's an athlete. 21. Unlike Bobby Wagner, he can run.
Yeah. No, you feel his energy out there for sure. Yes. And so, like, I know he was hurt by the injuries last year.
Yeah.
And I think that, that certainly, I think, gave them pause to just say, okay, we're going to turn over the keys to him in the middle. But I think that's the way they view him, or at least had viewed him, was a guy that could at some day replace Bobby in the middle. Now, whenever that is, whether it's next year, whatever, it's at some point that's what they need to see. And I don't know right now, like, it's still, you're right though. When he's out there, you feel it. There's one game he played five snaps and I went back and watched all five. I'm like, you feel that. You see him making some plays. And there was one game where he missed a couple of tackles that would have been really big plays for losses, but he was in position to make them. And, I think that was against Atlanta, maybe.
The Chargers game was the game where he kind of flashed.
For sure. But it was the Atlanta game where he played five snaps. And, like, you see him, like, okay, those are good five reps. And then you get more. And so, I am intrigued by him. But what I don't know at this point, Kevin, is, like, okay, it's one thing to be out there with Wagner and Luvu. It's another to be out there in charge of everybody. That's a different ballgame. Like, is he at that point where he can do that? I don't know. But I do know that when he's out there, you feel him. And I think at some point, you're going to want to see more of him.
All right, John Keim, of course, that's the voice you recognize joining us right now. So, look, the defense, big trouble. right now. Big trouble, especially considering the opponents. Last year, the opponents were not daunting. This year, they are, and they got big issues. So the only way, I think, you know, if we're looking at this sort of macro-wise, the only way that they can go have themselves a season is if the offense ends up becoming what it was last year, and they end up, you know, becoming the team's best defense by scoring and maintaining the football, and they're not healthy. But let's start with that. What do you make of Jaden's MRI results being, you know, coming back very promising, nothing serious? Do you think he misses Monday night or not?
Well, first of all, it was promising that it's not long-term. That's a key thing, right? And what we also know is with hamstrings, you have to be very careful because you don't want it to turn into something worse. So, you know, I would not be surprised. I don't know at this point, but I would not be surprised if he misses Monday night. It's just, it's not, you know, and there's, listen, what is it, Tuesday? We'll get an update on Thursday. But I, you know, as we sit here now, like, I'm not going to be surprised if he sits out Monday night, but don't know that for sure. It's just that, like, that becomes a logical conclusion based on injury. Now, the good thing is he was walking fine in the locker room after the game. And again, like, the MRI showed nothing significant. That's all good. But that also, like, missing a week means it's not significant. It just means now you're out a week at a time where this team really needs to find some sort of momentum. That's the hard part with this offense. All, Kevin, since training camp opened, it's been like this. And it's like nothing has changed. You know, Terry misses all of camp. Noah Brown misses a lot of camp because of his injury, you know, and so you in practice they never look like they had this great rhythm because you're missing two of your two outside guys, including a guy who, you know, was in the Pro Bowl, and that's, and then he comes back and then they're not in sync, and then they get hurt, and it's just, you know, then you lose Eckler. It's been like this since camp opened, and so you just wonder, will it ever turn for them?
You know, on the play in which he got injured, you know, they're on the move at that point, and they'd scored at the end of the first half. And I said yesterday and even emphasized today, I mean, how many times last year did we have, you know, maybe a roller coaster start to the game up and down, and then all of a sudden, look out, they're rolling in the second half. I think that was actually in play. I think that they were, you know, they had caught their stride a little bit. They were rolling. I don't know if it was going to be enough to come back and win the game because you couldn't get a stop. But, you know, on that particular play, I mean, he's going to throw to Ertz, and there's this free runner. Did you go back and look at that? And I'm just curious if you learned anything about why there was a free runner. Was that on Jaden, or was that on something else?
Well, that I don't know. Here's what you see. So, first of all, Ertz is going to be open on the slant.
Completion. He's going to throw it if the guy isn't in his way.
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny because someone's like, he's got to throw that ball. He had no chance. The guy is in his face, and so he's pulling it down to try and get away from the guy, and the guy just makes a great play. But there was a slight – it's not like the guy was coming at the snap.
No.
And the line – you know, Tunsil kicks out, then the guard – you know, Paul blocks down. So the line is sliding that way, the other way, and I think it just surprised him that this guy came. That's how when you watch it, that's what it looked like. Because a lot of times, like, he's pretty good knowing when there's a free rusher coming – typically.
Yeah.
And you saw that a few times the other night. Like, there, okay, you know, you have this guy coming off the edge. He's unblocked. You're going right over here with the ball. And I think, like, if you, you know, so I think, like, that's why I say I think that blitz caught them by surprise.
Okay.
For sure.
You know, as it relates to him not playing potentially on Monday night, and let's consider that as a distinct possibility. I mean, I don't want him to miss any games, and I'm not the you know, hey, if you know, you can't win that game anyway. Of course you can win that game. Every NFL game is winnable.
I
think but the way it sets up, if he's going to end up missing just one, it's better that it's against an AFC opponent like the Chiefs on the road, where there's going to be a short turnaround after Monday night to come back home on a Sunday night and play Seattle. So, maybe that's part of the thinking, is what I'm asking you, is, you know, there's a short week that follows off a Monday night game. If it's even close, do you think that they'll just opt for the safest in that scenario,
knowing that it's
more important to beat Seattle and Detroit at home the next 2 weeks, or to have a chance to beat those teams?
Yeah, and whether or not they look at it that way, I think if it's close, they'll err on the side of caution with him. because you, because again, with hamstrings, if you go out there and you and it's worse, now you could be looking at something really bad. So I think if it's close with a hamstring, you're going to err on the side of caution. To your point, though, like if you're, I can hear people making the Jim Moore impression, but if you're looking at the playoff race, and it's too early still for that, but if you're looking
playoffs.
At that, like exactly, like, and I know I can hear people saying, "What are you kidding me? You're crazy!" Like, maybe I'm a little bit, but like, if you're the team, you're 3-4.
Yeah,
your NFC record is really bad right now, so you can't afford any more setbacks there if you have any hope of getting hot in December and maybe getting into a wild card berth, because you've already lost to Green Bay, Atlanta, Dallas, like that's
Chicago.
Not good. And Chicago, like you're almost, to be honest, like at this point, if you don't win the division, it's going to be really tough to get in.
Yeah.
The way it looks right now, right? Like,
yeah, it's, we got a long way to go. But the Seattle, and Detroit games at home, and then you know, then you get two more AFC opponents, but you're going to need those too. But those games are actually more important than the Monday night game against Kansas City. Just are. But
I mean,
they
need to win any game right now. But yes, in the overall, when you're looking down the road, those NFC games are going to count, matter more.
So who are they going to trot out at wide receiver Monday night? Will Terry be back?
Dude, I've been thinking. I thought he was going to be back last week, so I don't know. I'm kind of tired of trying to guess that one.
Mm-hmm.
It did sound like it was very close. So you would think if it was that close, and closer than it had been, if it was that close, then you would think this week it would be the week. I think the question is, will he and Debo be out there together? Like, because that's what they need. Like, just one of them is not going to be enough anymore. And so you need both there. But I, you know, again, like, I didn't know it was going to go this long. And again, if it was close, really close last week, then I think you would start to assume that, well, it would have to look better this week. But at this point, Kevin, arms up in the air, we'll see.
Why is it taking this long?
Soft tissue. I also think, you know, when you're a receiver and you're a fast guy, like I just think it's a little bit different than if you're a defensive lineman or someone else, like where it's like you're not as reliant on your speed, and if you feel anything, then if you don't feel like you're playing at the speed you need to, then maybe it's just tougher. I don't, you know, that's, but it's, you know, soft tissue. It's always tricky with those.
I saw that you retweeted yesterday the Schefter tweet that Tennessee wide receiver, former Seattle wide receiver, Tyler Lockett.
I don't know anything.
I've always been a fan of Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, me too.
Has asked for and he has received his release from the Titans. He's expected to be free to sign with another team after 4 p.m. on Wednesday. So, do you think they'd be interested in a Tyler Lockett?
I mean, why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like they wanted to get Kendrick Bourne, who would have looked really good here, and they actually made an offer. And he chose San Francisco. But so why wouldn't you want to look at a guy that is, you know, is probably still better than what else you have that's beyond Terry and Debo, but those guys are banged up. So it would make sense. The question is, if you're Lockett, where would you want to go? And, you know, obviously he played for Seattle for a long time. I don't know that they need receiver help. You know, ties with Pete Carroll, but like, you know, I don't know. And if you're Lockett, what are you looking for? Are you looking for another one more contract after this? Or are you trying to finish up your career in a better place? You know, so I think there's a lot of factors there, but why wouldn't you be?
I mean, we're not Siberia anymore. It's more attractive than it used to be.
Oh, for sure. And I'm not saying it's not. I'm just wondering, like, okay, so if Jane's injured, you know, does that make a difference? But he's going to be there, so you have a quarterback you can play with, and it's a good offensive system. Like, listen, man, so we're talking about the offense. Look, they've actually produced pretty well given what's happened this year.
Yes, they have.
They've lost. You have to look at that and say, like, yes, this is conducive to this. And there are going to be opportunities because, you know, when Terry and Debo are back, well, those are their top two guys. But do you have that established third guy now? Like Noah Brown, I thought was a good third receiver for them last year. He's hurt. He's going to miss 8 weeks, and what's it going to look like when he comes back? And he missed most of training camp. Like, you can't count on that. So you need to go, if you can find someone else, then it behooves you to find someone else. So, like, there is an attractiveness to this position. It's not like they're 2-6 and they're playing, you know, a fifth-round pick.
Exactly.
This is not a bad situation, but at all. But if you're looking somewhere like, you know, I'd like to go help a contender, well, right now you can't put them in that category right now. So I don't know, you know, that's what I say. Like, if you're looking to put up some numbers, like, you're going to get some opportunities here if you came.
But you know, Kendrick Bourne's actually played really well in San Francisco.
And again, like, they, my understanding is that they made him an offer and that they definitely were interested in him. And he went back to the team that he once played for. So, yeah. You know, but yes, that would have been a good ad for sure.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for doing this, as always. Hope you're well. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kevin.
John Keim, everybody. Kendrick Bourne, 25 catches in 6 games. He's the second leading pass reception receiver on the 49ers so far this year. Christian McCaffrey has 53 catches. Christian McCaffrey's having one of those seasons, by the way. He is so crucial. If you've got Trent Williams, George Kittle, and Christian McCaffrey, and Kittle just came back, you got a shot in San Francisco to still be super productive on offense. That would be interesting. You know, tomorrow 4 p.m. This isn't the worst place anymore. And offensively, even though it's been inconsistent and it's looked at times to be disjointed, and a lot of that probably has to do with the revolving doors at wide receiver and even some of the changes in other spots, still trying to figure out the running back situation. Kroski Merritt is not a front runner, as most of you thought he would be through 7 weeks for Rookie of the Year. So we'll see. I would think Terry is got to be soon. Debo, having Terry and Debo there for Mariota, if it's Mariota Monday night, will be massive. They need to give him something. And by the way, if not, we're going to turn into a college offense Monday night. It's going to be Mariota 18 rushes minimum. By the way, not a bad way to play. All right, coming up next, what was I going to do? What were we going to do next? Oh, we were going to go around the NFL next. We did not have a chance to go through all of the games, and there were some really good ones, including in the division, the two other division teams playing games that were rather exciting. We'll get to those, go around the NFL, give you guys a chance to weigh in next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. And don't forget, you can watch us on the Team 980's YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button when you get there.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
With Juergens dealing with an injury, deep drop for Hurts, trying to find something downfield, and it's Devontae Smith. He's loose. He's got it. He is gone. Touchdown, Eagles.
Lightning strike to Devontae Smith.
Devontae Smith, career day, 9 catches, 183 yards. A.J. Brown, 4 catches, 121 yards. Jalen Hurts, a perfect passer rating at 158.3. A near-perfect QBR at 95.1. He was 19 of 23 for 326 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. On a day where, once again, they could not run the football. Saquon Barkley, 2.4 yards per carry. Do you guys know what Saquon Barkley's averaging yards per carry this year? 3.3 yards per carry. Last year's 2,000-yard-plus rusher, averaging nearly 6 yards per carry. This year, it's almost 50% of that. It is rough for Philly to run the football, but just when you least expect it, they need the throwing, you know, Jalen Hurts version, and he puts up one of the games of the year for a quarterback. And so many of those were big plays. The first touchdown was a fourth down touchdown pass to A.J. Brown. Others were big third down plays. They beat the Vikings 28-22 to stop a two-game losing skid. You know, they had lost to the Broncos blowing that lead and had gotten pummeled, really, by the Giants on Thursday Night Football. I'm going to tell you, man, going to Minnesota, that is a tough place to win. I don't care who's playing for them. Carson Wentz, you know, had another rough outing at times. He's Carson Wentz. He's going to make big plays, and he's going to take some big sacks and make a couple of, bit, you know, terrible throws. He had 2 picks in the game. But the Eagles, I can't figure them out. We may have to stop trying, because defensively they did get Jalen Carter back. By the way, he was huge in what turned out to be a pick six for Philly. I don't know. It's week in, week out for the Eagles, but they're sitting atop our division at 5-2. But against a Brian Flores defense on the road, that crowd is insane. For Jalen Hurts to drop dime after dime on deep balls, crazy. When they need him to do it, you know, in a real big spot, in a big game, and a have-to-have, it seems like he always delivers. And then you watch him on a Thursday night in the Meadowlands against the Giants, and you're like, he's not very good. Philadelphia, 28-22 winners. They get the Giants, so it's 2 against the Giants in 3 games for both of them. They get the Giants Sunday at the Link. Speaking of the Giants, an all-time blown game in Denver on Sunday.
Stacked in at the line of scrimmage. It's a 3rd and 5. They come up the middle. Heavy pressure in the third. Intercepted. It's picked off by Stroud. He breaks a tackle. Breaks another. Now inside the 20. Oh, disaster. What a play. 21-yard return. Stroud comes up with the pick.
Kevin Harlan on the call. That was a disaster. Let me give you the setup for that. So the Giants had legitimately dominated the Denver Broncos, who came into the game winners of 3 in a row, including a win in Philadelphia over the Eagles. They were down 19-0 entering the fourth quarter and were down 26-8 after kind of a fluke touchdown pass with 6 minutes to go in the game. Down 26-8. Denver scores a touchdown. They go for 2. They convert. It's 26-16. And that interception happened with 4 minutes and 56 seconds left in the game, with Denver holding 1 timeout. So you're up 10 with 1 timeout left. If you run the ball, they'll call the final timeout. If you don't get the first down, you'll punt it. And then Denver, with 4:40 to go, will need to score twice. They'll need to score a touchdown, and they'll need to kick a field goal. But they'll have no timeouts left. So more likely than not, given that they'll have to travel kind of the length of the field to get it done, they're going to have to recover an onside kick to actually complete the comeback, if it even gets to that point. And the Giants put the ball up in the air, and Jackson Dart was picked off. They scored 56 seconds later. They didn't have to kick an onside kick. And then the game got even stupider down the stretch. They scored. The Giants then came down and scored. And then after a missed extra point, Denver got into field goal range, and you had the walk-off winner. 33 points scored by Denver, all of their points in the game in the fourth quarter. That was not a misspeak. They won the game 33-32 in all 33 of their points, all of them, including, by the way, 27 of their points in the final 6 minutes, but all 33 scored in the fourth quarter of the football game. That is pretty insane. The Giants kicker in for Graham Gano over the last few weeks missed two extra points in the game. I think the Giants are a good team. I think they are a good football team. I know they're good defensively, even though they gave up 33. Of course, the turnover contributed a little bit to that. But it's the first time in NFL history, by the way, anybody scored 33 after scoring none in the first quarter, scored 33 in the fourth, and won the football game. They got some resilient dudes. You know, this guy, Bo Nix, we're not talking a lot about him. Obviously, last year was all about Jaden. This year, it's all about Drake May so far and some of his performances. But Bo Nix, man, has that ability, and he is really, really effective as a designed runner, option runner, and scrambler. He had two touchdowns rushing in the comeback over the New York Giants. Do the Giants go into a hole? Is that just such a devastating loss they can't recover? Or do they do some of the things they've been doing? Running the football, Jackson Dart, not super high completion percentage, takes a bunch of sacks, but he's making plays. And then they got a defense. There's no doubt they got a defense. The Giants and Eagles coming up. The Giants would have been right there with us at the bottom of the division at 3-4. And they would have appeared to have been the team on an upward trajectory. Instead, 2-5 after a devastating loss against the Denver Broncos. Another tough place to win. Let's go to Arrowhead for Washington's next opponent.
Looks left, throws left, and it is caught by Rice for his second touchdown of the game.
Rashee Rice's return was a good one. He's a really good receiver. They've missed him. 7 catches, 42 yards, 2 touchdowns. A game that I've already talked about. By the way, they targeted him like 12 times in his first game back. Mahomes didn't waste any time. But I already talked about the box score of this game. Netting it out, it's one of the most lopsided box scores you'll ever see. 434 yards to 95, 77 plays to 30, 30 first downs to 3. Kansas City was never stopped until they stopped themselves. They went touchdown, 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 field goal. And then in the fourth quarter, they just ran the ball six times, and just wanted the clock to run out so that they didn't hurt anybody on the other side. How bad are the Vegas Raiders? I mean, that's one of Washington's impressive wins. They are a bad football team. They have lost now games 41-24 to Washington, 40-6 against the Colts, and 31-0 against the Chiefs. Pete Carroll's first year not going that well. Chiefs and Washington Monday night at Arrowhead. The best team in football, the best record in football right now is owned by the Indianapolis Colts.
It's a good coach right there. It's Taylor on the acceleration. Touchdown.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because Tampa last night lost at Detroit. But the Colts are 6-1. They lead the league in scoring. It was, you know, really not even this close. 38-24 was the final score. At one point, they led 31-10, 23-3, 38-17. The Chargers, after their fast start, are now 4-3. They started 3-0. They've now lost three of their last four. That's a team reeling in the offensive line area. Herbert threw two picks in the game. Also threw for 420 yards. But the story of the season right now, the Indianapolis Colts and the season that Daniel Jones is having. Another outstanding day for Jones, 23 of 34 for 288, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Jonathan Taylor leads the league in rushing, another 3 touchdowns for him. Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State, is likely right now going to be your offensive rookie of the year. He's been outstanding. They have great balance. Shane Steichen does a pretty good job. But Daniel Jones, if you're not following this, now with a 6-1 football team, is perfect in this balanced offense that uses his legs when he needs to, but he's got a lot of options to throw the football. That team is loaded at wide receiver and at tight end, not to mention the back that they have in Jonathan Taylor. Indy gets to 6-1 on the season. You can go back and you can say, well, they beat the Dolphins, they beat the Titans, they beat the Raiders, they beat the Cardinals, they pummeled the Chargers, and up next they get the Titans to get to 7-1. So Indianapolis right now looks like the AFC South might be theirs to run away with. They've got the largest point differential in the league, something that is often an indicator this time of year as you're trying to figure out who's good and who isn't, you know, not necessarily only by record. Look at point differential, plus 92 on the season. The next best is Detroit at plus 64, 28 points fewer than Indy's point differential. Do I think Indy's going to win the Super Bowl or get to it? I don't, because Patrick Mahomes resides in the AFC. And I think as long as they're in the postseason, that's a tough ask. But wow, what a season Indianapolis is having. All right, we'll finish up going around the NFL when we come back. At 12, we will get into a couple of things, including the games last night and the baseball thriller in Game 7. How about George Springer? Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
All right, happy Tuesday, everybody. We start off last night with MLB Game 7 in the postseason. Mariners and Blue Jays locked in a tight one with the Mariners up 3-1 in the sixth inning. Then Brian Wu walks the first batter in the seventh, gives up a single, put two runners on base, and playoff hero George Springer steps up to the plate and crushed one to deep left center field to give life to the Blue Jays and lift them over the Mariners by a score of 4-3. Plus, Monday Night Football, the Detroit Lions, they get the win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers by a score of 24-9. Jahmyr Gibbs with one hell of a performance, 218 yards from scrimmage and two touchdowns. Then the Seattle Seahawks, they beat the Houston Texans 27-19. Seattle Seahawks wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba with the performance of the night in this one with eight receptions for 123 yards and a touchdown. Tonight, the Caps get underway against the Seattle Kraken. Logan Thompson in line to get the start tonight. Pierre-Luc Dubois out dealing with lower body injury still. Pregame underway at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
First and goal from the five. Why not? Gibbs again. Spinning touchdown.
Jahmyr Gibbs, pretty good. There's some good running backs in this league, man. 136 yards last night, two touchdowns rushing, also three catches for 82 yards in the game. The Lions beat the Bucks in the first of the last two-game Monday Nighter schedules. They won 24-9. Big part of this game is Mike Evans getting injured, and maybe seriously, he could be done for a big portion of the rest of the year. Baker Mayfield was off last night. You know, we've talked about Jaden being off here and there. Boy, was Baker Mayfield off. He was high all night, not high with his passing last night. Threw a pick, could have been picked another two or three times. You know, took sacks, 28 of 50 for the, you know, MVP, one of the MVP front runners in the game. He'd come in, you know, with a, you know, pretty high completion percentage. Rough night for Tampa. They get beat by Detroit 24-9. Tampa at 5-2. Detroit at 5-2. Those divisions really interesting because right now Green Bay at 4-1-1 is actually ahead of Detroit. And Tampa at 5-2. You know who's in second place in that division a game back? Carolina. The Carolina Panthers are the team currently in second place. They play Tampa twice, but at the end of the season. What about the other Monday night game last night? Houston at Seattle.
Running behind a heavy formation and just walking into the end zone.
Yeah, Kenneth Walker III, Zach Charbonnet. Those guys are good at running back. Seattle, I mean, it's Kansas City for us and then Seattle on a Sunday night. Really good football teams, followed by Detroit the week after that. This is the part of the schedule that's going to tell the tale. Darnold, though, you know, gave it up a couple times, had a fumble that was recovered for a touchdown, had a bad interception. Houston is one of those teams. Their biggest issue is they have no offensive line because they have some playmakers. They have a quarterback that's okay in Stroud. Their defense, though, Will Anderson is an absolute animal. You know, to go, you know, one end with Danielle Hunter on the other, that's a really good defensive team. Houston, for those of you that stayed up like I did have a chance for a backdoor cover or even, you know, a potential touchdown to get on the board, tie with a two-point conversion, but they lose 27-19. I think the Seahawks are a contender in the NFC. They are 5-2 with the 49ers and the Rams. How about the NFC West? Three teams at 5-2. Let's go back to Sunday night football, the Falcons and the 49ers.
They get the gifts. They close it out. And here he is on the run. Inside. Pushing the pile.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey, two touchdowns, 129 yards rushing, 72 on seven catches in the pass game. He is having himself a season. It was another Mac Jones game. Look, Atlanta, Atlanta has some issues at head coach with the management of the game. They have I love Penix a lot. He right now is riding that roller coaster early, you know, part of his career. One week looks great against our defense, obviously. Against a better defense in San Francisco, he did not look good at all. Really couldn't find people, made bad decisions, had an intentional grounding penalty at the end of the first half that cost him a chance at points. 49ers were awesome defensively. In that game, by the way, if you're curious, I am. Penix Jr. got banged up at the end. They're calling it day-to-day. It's possible that Kirk Cousins could get the start Sunday against the Dolphins in Atlanta if Penix isn't able to go. The Falcons fall to 3-3, and the 49ers, again, a part of that three-team, first-place tie in the NFC West, all of those teams at 5-2. How about the Packers eking one out over the Arizona Cardinals?
Who fakes the handoff to Jacobs, and now throws, and it's taken in for a touchdown by Kraft.
I thought one of the craziest decisions of the day was the decision that Matt LaFleur made. And he made it on a 4th and 2 with 2 minutes and 32 seconds left in the game with his team down by 3. They're at the Arizona 29-yard line. They are in easy field goal range. Easy, 46 yards now is easy in the NFL. They're down 23-20. 2.5 minutes to go in the football game, and they went for it. He explained afterwards, he said, Matt looked like he was kind of upset that they hadn't gotten the first down and looked like he really was going to go after it on 4th and 2. If they don't convert that 4th and 2, which they did, by the way, on not an easy play, like the first option wasn't there, the second option wasn't there, and then he found Tucker Kraft, the tight end that killed us on Thursday night in week 2, and he barely got both feet in for a big play that ultimately led to a go-ahead and game-winning touchdown. But have you noticed, as NFL fans, teams just are going for it on 4th down willy-nilly all the time. Field goals they seem to be allergic to, unless they're exciting 60-yard-plus field goals. That is not an analytics go-for-it situation. There's no way it could be. No way. You have to take the points and tie the game up. If you don't convert, you lose. I think they had some timeouts left in the 2-minute warning, so it's possible they could have gotten the ball back. And I'm sure that's part of the calculus, but weird. They won the game. The Packers are a weird team right now. You know, they're capable of some really good stuff. Micah Parsons, by the way, had 3 sacks to close out that game. They're 4-1-1. They play the Steelers this week, Sunday Night Football. So the Packers against their former quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. I wanted to get to one game here to finish up. Let's get to it quickly. New England at Tennessee. I want to talk about Drake May.
May taking a deep shot down the field. Booty is down there. Touchdown. What a catch. Kayshon Booty.
Drake May makes some incredible plays, and I'm talking about incredible off-schedule plays. There's a lot to like about Drake May and the season he's having. You know, there are a couple of things. They beat the Titans 31-13. By the way, I thought Cam Ward was... I think he's going to be okay. It's a long way to go, clearly, with his 7th start. But he can throw the football, for sure. The Patriots are 5-2. Okay, they are 5-2 football team. Their best win was obviously at Buffalo on Sunday Night Football. But they've beaten the Dolphins, they've beaten the Panthers, they've beaten the Saints and Titans. They get the Browns this week to get to 6-2. They're a big favorite. But this team is a couple of things. This team is, number one, well-coached. Vrabel is legit. Number two, they are good on both sides of the football. They are good defensively. They can cover. Christian Gonzalez was the pick, not Emmanuel Forbes, who's playing, I think, pretty well with the Rams right now. They have weapons. Adding Stephon Diggs for them was huge. Diggs, 39 catches on the season for 456 yards. He has been a massive weapon for the young quarterback in May. But make no mistake, they can run the football too with Stevenson. Drake May looks legit. Now, a couple of things, because I watched, this was the first game, the second game, because I watched a lot of the Saints game the week before. There are a couple of things. He still occasionally, as a young quarterback, will hold on to it too long, and he'll take some sacks. He took, I think, 4 sacks Sunday against Tennessee. Tennessee's not that bad defensively. He also, man, does get hit a lot. And puts his body at risk a lot. He looked like he was completely concussed on a play. And that, you know, like with our guy, you know, health and availability is the most, is the biggest ability. And I wonder how that will hold up. But he's got a stronger frame. You know, he's 230 pounds. Jaden's 210 or whatever he is. But Drake May's start to this season with a really good coach, a great coordinator in Josh McDaniel, Very, very impressed. This is a team, when you look at their schedule, a last-place schedule, they're kind of doing what Washington did last year, taking advantage of a very weak schedule, but being a much better coach team than they had been previously. And he's playing at a very, very high level right now. I think they've got a chance. You know, they've got, you know, the Browns. They've got games against, two games against the Jets. They play the Bengals. They play the Giants. They play the Dolphins. I think they're going to get to 10 wins, and they're going to push Buffalo for that division. He's been a fun quarterback to watch. And he is, for those that really liked him, after Jaden and Caleb in front of J.J. McCarthy, as an example, because remember how many people had McCarthy after Jaden? He's making you look good. He is great off schedule. Really, really good off schedule. All right, when we come back, is the season salvageable? 3-4, two straight losses. Is this season salvageable? And I'll define it this way. When I say salvageable, at this point, given that they are 3-4, that means at the very least, they go to the final week of the season with a chance to make the playoffs. They either make the playoffs, worst case, they go to the final week of the season, early January in Philadelphia, with a chance to win and make the playoffs. That is salvageable the way I am defining it. Is the season salvageable? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Kevin Sheehan Show.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.